Oh, and Irene?
I just thought it'd be interesting to compare her. I said the third, but actually I had it right here. On the top, and I can't see it. Public like her, it's too personal, I think, for her to be just too public.
Well, the reason I was delayed is that I walked down the hallway and Floyd Aiken was there.
He tried to get away from me.
Yeah, he wanted to talk, mm-hmm. and he'd just gotten Gladys Parker, just come back from Hawaii.
This morning,
and she had looked up the florist that he mm-hmm. became friendly with in Hawaii.
Oh,
he brought her. She brought him some flowers from Hawaii.
Oh,
from
those
the florist.
Ones he's carrying around today. Yeah. He had some kind of little lily things. He's
and then on the way back, well, we had to talk some more, but you know.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm just trying to get away from those flowers. Now. You're not making a tape now, though.
No, I just started it.
Just winding it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, she's only in Hawaii 2 weeks, but she'd been 2 weeks in Seattle before she came home.
I see.
She didn't come direct here from Hawaii.
I see.
Yeah, she's 2 weeks in Seattle.
Well, just for
now,
the purpose
now,
of
where do you want to start from? You want to read this first, and then we make comments
yeah.
about that later
mm-hmm.
on. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And
but
start from
first
like,
of all,
first
I just like
family or what?
Well, first of all, I just want to give the date, which is March the 6th.
Today's 6th, so March the 6th. Mm-hmm.
And we're in Clara Russ' room at the Pioneer
mm-hmm.
Home,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just testing this to
Fairbanks,
see.
Fairbanks, Alaska, maybe.
Fairbanks, Alaska, of mm-hmm. course.
Yeah, well, maybe you make the introduction.
And the purpose of this tape is to talk to Clara. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking for the purposes of the microphone, Clara.
You're talking to the tape now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Clara and I were talking recently about a story that appeared in the February issue of Alaska Magazine. It was a little feature article done by Chuck Darby with a picture. It's on Irene Mary Sherman. And I wanted to talk to Clara about it because Clara recalls the incident. At any rate, do you think I ought to read this, Clara, and then we could comment on it? We could just read through this.
Well, if they'd rather do that way, I'm going to be alive.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to? Why don't you read part of it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then correct yourself.
And then we'll just talk about some of the things in there that might be debatable.
Uh-huh. Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
There is only one Irene Mary Sherman, self-proclaimed Queen of Fairbanks.
Now, you're quoting now. Mm-hmm. Clara's reading now.
Mm-hmm. Reading from the book, uh-huh.
Yeah.
She is a familiar figure in the Golden Heart City, and there are a few residents who don't take time to wave as she goes peddling by on a three-wheeler bike in the summertime, or stumps through winter's deep snow at 50 degrees below zero, clad in faded parking and surplus GI boots. Irene's imposing voice, especially when she is excited, can only be compared to a jet fighter's afterburner under full power. Her heart, though, like her voice, is certainly far larger than the body it controls. She would give you the shirt off her back, all four of them, and a couple of parkas to boot. Now a robust 64, Irene was born in a three-room cabin between 6th and 7th Avenue, just off of Cushman Street in Fairbanks. One of seven sisters and two brothers, children of J.P. and Agnes Sherman, who came to Alaska in 1904. When she was 5, tragedy struck, leaving scars she will carry the end of her life. While a neighbor girl was caring for the children, a fire started in the small log cabin. One brother died in the blaze, and Irene received third-degree burns over her entire body and face. For 3 years, she received local treatment and then was sent to Seattle hospitals, where she stayed for the next 10 years. Now, do you want me to go back on this fire deal, or do you want to go a little farther now?
Well, why don't we just read the whole thing, and then...
And oh, how I hated that place, Irene now recalls. It was the worst 10 years of my life. I've never been back there, and I wouldn't take a square inch of the whole place if they gave me to the keys to the city. I was so lonesome, and I didn't know what to do with myself. She has never been outside since. Irene returned to her beloved Alaska in 1929, this time to Healy, where her father lived. J.P. Sherman was a jack-of-all-trades from Wisconsin. In Healy, he prospected, mined, and trapped, and his daughter gives him credit for finding the original deposits of the Sundrana coal mine. Fairbanks became her permanent home in 1932 after a spell of trapping with her father at Lake Minchumina. Her friends are varied and many, mostly made during her nightly excursions through the streets of downtown Fairbanks, where she surveys local nightlife in the summer months as she conducts her own private cleanup campaign with wheelbarrow and rake, clearing the streets around her streets around her small home in Grail of discarded cans, paper, and other trash. She also assists many of her close friends in planting and harvesting their summer gardens. Irene was hospitalized in 1973, but her friends were betting that the Queen of Fairbanks would soon be back on her feet, especially if courage and determination are involved. She is a one-of-a-kind Alaskan, an authentic sourdough. To meet her is to remember her. I agree on that.
Yeah.
So, anyway, she's in Carriage North right now, you know.
Oh, she's still
there? Yeah, she's still there. They're keeping her there because Vera Hyde said that this group that she's with from the studying environmental things at the university, they made a tour here one night, and then they made a tour of Carriage North last night. And she said, oh, Irene was there, and she was so glad to see him on. She would have talked all night if they had given her a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So, is
she undergoing medical treatment, or?
Well, she's just not capable of taking care of herself right now, I guess. They want to get her fed and maybe cleaned up, and then when summer comes, her home isn't right for her to go back to, so they're going to keep her there, don't they?
Oh, last summer I went over and picked her up, you know, to take her to lunch during Golden Days.
Oh, yeah.
She's all dressed up, and I went in her home there, and it's... Uh-huh.
And this tells about cleaning up around there. She almost should clean up her own premises because, boy, she's a collector, you know.
She's a collector, uh-huh. And her house is just cram full of things.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, why don't you comment on that story now? Did her mother come to this country was her mother in Alaska?
Well, it's quite a long story if you want to take it all.
Just tell me what you
her
know.
Mother and, her grandmother's. Her grandmother and grandfather, at that time, when I came to Fairbanks in 1908, they had charge of the 3rd Avenue Hotel. It was on Cushman Street between 3rd and 4th. Mm-hmm. It wasn't quite too 4th because the Floridora Dance Hall was the corner of 4th and Cushman, and this building went right up to that. Later, after they'd had a fire in the building, it was extended the main floor of the hotel, extended out over where the Floridora was. So it was Alaska Market that time, mm-hmm. And they extended the hotel out to 4th Avenue over that. But the folks, it was a nice place. They had a restaurant right there. Right on the main corner of 3rd and Cushman was Gordon's Store. That was in the first floor of the hotel. And then right next to that was this restaurant, and her parents ran the restaurant and the hotel.
Her parents?
Yes, her parents. I don't remember their initials, but...
Are we talking about Irene's parents?
We're talking about Irene's grandparents.
The
grandparents, yes. And they were running this, their name was Sherman, they was running this, no, Patton. Her grandparents' name was Patton.
Patton?
Patton, yes. They're no relation to Everett Patton, uh-huh. But they were Patton. And they had these two girls, and the younger girl was a cashier in the restaurant, and she began going with the... a man that, I don't remember his name, that worked for the First National Bank. He was quite crippled. And first thing you know, they were engaged to be married. And then Irene was telling everybody the mother, they called the mother Agnes in here, but Betty seems to ring a bell with me for her mother, but we'll say Agnes, as long as she's called her that. She mm-hmm. probably knows more about her mother's name than I do. But anyway, the Agnes was fussing because she was the oldest, and she didn't think her sister should get married before she did. And there was a man by the name of this man, Sherman. Was it named Sherman? Yeah. This man, Sherman, that later became her Irene's father. He was a roomer at the hotel and at the her rooming board at mm-hmm. the hotel. And he was a trapper. He was out in the country. Seemed to think he was around in the toward Bonnefield up in that way somewhere, because he'd go back and forth with mm-hmm. the dog team. And so the couple times there when Irina talked him into taking her, I mean, Agnes. I always want to say Irina, I'm sorry. Agnes talked him into to taking her to a dance. And then when they came home this night, why, out of nowhere, she announced that they were engaged to be married. And Mother comes out and he says, well, heck no, I don't want to marry her, because he said, I'm out in the woods, I don't want to marry anybody. And but the folks made such a fuss about it, and just why or what, I don't know. Maybe Irene or Agnes made a little fuss about, maybe he had made advances toward her or something. I don't know what it was. But anyway, first thing you know, he was forced to marry her. And so they lived there at the hotel for a short time, and then he went away, and he went off on his trap line wherever he went. And Irene was alone all the time.
Agnes.
And, I'm sorry, why don't I say that? Agnes was alone all the time, and he was gone. And she used to come up to the dances at Eagle Hall, and I remember people were kidding her about her husband, you know, and she would say, well, if you don't come back after me, he'll sure come back after his coat, because she was wearing, he had a great big one, the big wolf coats that everybody was wearing at that time, the men especially, or like a similar to a coonskin coat. And she'd wrap that around her and hug down it, and she would say, well, if you don't come back after me, he'll surely come back after his coat, you know, and talk that way. And so then the first thing you know, why, she was pregnant. And he came down once in the time, and I guess he left some money there for her or something. She was staying at the hotel with her parents. And so she was bringing the baby in a little cream case to the dances. She'd shove the baby down in there and come and dance all night.
The canned milk case?
And just like the carnation. Everything came in wooden boxes, and not cartons like they have now. They're wooden boxes. And they came in a nice, well, everybody was saving these wooden boxes. They were nice for various things, and carnation box. It was about the size of what a carton would be now, when it was wood. And that was fastened onto a sled. And she'd pull the sled with her rope. She'd pull that into the restroom, and the attendants there, they were after all the time, and because she'd leave that baby in there crying, it was smelly and dirty, you know, and she'd come in and she'd shove an old coal bottle in his face and slap it down, and even finally the attendant got after her and said that she had to change that baby, but she didn't seem to have much to change her with. And so finally Eagles had to tell her that she couldn't come and bring the baby like that, she'd have to get a babysitter, because it wasn't fair to the attendants and people going in there, and she just smelt too much, you know. So the next thing you knew, why, he had taken her off on the trap line, and out there, and he had left her in the cabin with plenty of wood and stuff to keep her warm, and told her to stay there and keep warm till he got back from his line. But she got tired waiting for him, so she sticks the baby into her sled, and she pulls it up and starts looking for him. And she finally hadn't met him at all, and she started to go back, and finally he caught up with her, and he gave her heck for being out there, and the baby was frozen, the baby died, she had frozen the baby. And so then they stayed up on the trap line a little while and come back, and then she was going to have another baby, and so that's just, you know, the start of, I guess, that must have been Irene. The one that she
second
had later
one
on, the
probably
second one,
Irene.
Yes, Where she gets the 5-7 sisters and brothers, I don't know, because there weren't that many. And so then Agnes was back in town and hanging around, and then her oldest, this baby, this girl, got to be about 5 years old. If she had any other children, I can't remember. All I know is this one baby. And I don't know whether the husband gave up on her and left her or what happened to him, but never heard of him. Nobody heard of him or knew him around, but Agnes was around here on her own all the time with this little 5-year-old girl.
Well, I remember when Sherman died. He was in the Pioneer Home in Sitka.
Oh, was he?
And I can't remember the year now, but it was, let me think for a second. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been 1968 that he died.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he was in the Pioneer Home in Sitka.
Oh.
Because I remember I worked at the News Miner and I wrote the obituary for the paper.
Oh, did you? Oh.
And I wondered at that time, I said to myself, I wonder if that could be related to Irene Sherman.
Uh-huh.
And by golly, it was. I saw her. She called and it was.
Oh, she said her father was there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then she And then I saw her the day of the funeral. I didn't go to the funeral because mm-hmm. I didn't know him. And
no.
I saw her right afterwards. Mm-hmm. Some of us in News Minor had gone over to the Nevada bar.
And was sitting there drinking. I think it was 68. I didn't think too much about
it. I'd have to go back and check on that, uh-huh. Clara, but I think it was about 68, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because she was in Alta. She went down to Nannan, and Agnes did, and she lived down there, and she's boasted. The men said that you wake up in the morning and find her in bed with him, something like that, because she would become just a tramp down there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then she came back to Fairbanks, and she was running around when Irene was about 4 or 5 years old, while she was running around Fairbanks with a colored man named Green. I think it was Ben Green. He was a great big colored fellow, and he drove a truck, and I don't remember just what, I guess he hauled wood or garbage, or he might have been hauling wood and drove this big truck, because everybody's burning wood at that time anyway. No one had much coal. And I guess the neighbors there, they shoot in this little cabin. Now, I don't know about her saying, I don't know if she was born in this cabin where the fire was or what. But this little cabin is across from Eagle Hall. You know, Eagle Hall's right there on Fifth Avenue. And at this time that the fire broke out was 1924. It was 1924 by this time. And they were in this little cabin across from Eagle Hall. There was the Gordon's store, it was right on the corner, and back of Gordon's was kind of an old warehouse. It had been used different times. One time somebody opened up a spud nut shop in there or something, and right next to that was this little log cabin. I think it was about one room with kind of a lean-to on the back of it. And she'd go off and ride around this green and leave the little girl, and at that time she had another baby. It must have been about a 12, 14-month-old baby. And she would leave them there with it. And the neighbors were complaining about her going off with this colored fellow and having her hanging around there. So the authorities told Ben he had to leave her alone because she should be home taking care of her children, and he was not to pick her up or take her around. So then, I don't know if it was through Ben or through Agnes herself or not, but they would go down to on the corner of 5th and Barnett. There was a colored lady there by the name of Chloe, and her back door is right to the back door of the old 4th Avenue line. Mm-hmm. And she used to wear silks for the girls and did a little bootlegging on the side. And so she would meet Green there, and they would sit there and drink beer. So the Sunday afternoon, they were down there drinking beer, and she left Irene at home. And then there was a couple, she says she had a babysitter, but there was no babysitter there when the fire broke out, because there was Irene, and she was the oldest of the four children that were in the cabin. There was she, and then there was a little girl, there's the daughter of a fellow they called Dirty Face Porter. I don't remember what Porter's initials were, but she, a little girl, she had just a beautiful voice, about 4 years old, and used to have her at the Pioneer programs and all to sing. She just had a strong voice for a small girl like that. And then there was a boy. I wish I could remember. I knew for a while who the boy's name was. And then there was a little boy there, around the same age, maybe 4 or 5 years old. He was with them. And Jess, my husband, was, of course, a strong Eagle, and he belonged to the Eagles drill team. So almost every Sunday afternoon, they would go down and drill and have practice, because they put on initiation where they put the men through all kinds of torture, you know. Yeah. They would put them on a chair, it'd fall apart, and an electric chair, and they'd lay them out like they were going to operate on him, and like they'd show him the knife, you know, and all, and then blindfold him, and they'd lay a hunk of ice on him, you know, like it was cutting him, and all this kind of stuff. Scared people to death. I know Avakov always said that he think when Jess was on the team initiating him, he said he think they gave him the worst works of anybody. And he said he comforted not going back to the Eagles after that, but that was one of their deals that they did. So anyway, they're practicing. Paul Rickert was the head of the drill team, the one that had the big farms called Rickert's Division up there then. That was the end of town, you know.
Yeah. Rickert's Homestead.
Yeah. And was that on Cushman and about 10th, 12th Avenue up there. That was, I'd say about 12th, 13th would be that was the end of town. His homestead was there, great big gardens. Well, he was the drill master, and there's usually about 10, 12 in the drill team. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Sutherland, he was a prominent physician, like the old family physician here, and he was a pianist. He played the piano for their marches. He was all for, 20, 30 years, he was a pianist for the Eagles. And while they were drilling, a man burst in the door, and he said, "What's the matter in here?" He said, "Call the fire department. There's a cabin burning down across the street." He said, "I think there's kids in there." And so he dashed out, and Jess dashed out, and he said, here's these, he could just see Toodle faces against the window.
Oh.
So they kicked the glass in, and they got these two children out, and then they found another one later when they could get in there, and the fire department got there pretty quick, but they went in and started to find the kids and get them out, you know, and they broke in the door. One of the little youngsters kept crying that, there's a baby, my baby is in there, my baby brother's in there, and I guess that must have been Irene, or Agnes, no, it would be Irene.
Maybe.
And so then, when they broke the door in, they had, in their excitement, they had pushed the door, the baby buggy against the door, and when the boys broke it in, it knocked the buggy over, and the baby was behind the door, and it was pretty well charred. It was, well, it didn't live much longer afterwards. Mm-hmm. Jess said, he picked the baby up.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so sick he couldn't eat supper, and it was a terrible, pitiful thing. But you see, she'd gone off, left the kids, and the kids got cold. And there's this little log cabin with the balloon ceiling, like the, you know, the cabins were very inflammable, you know.
With the material.
They had the material. They'd soak cloth to fit across the ceiling and then tack it up. And then they would paste the ceiling paper onto that. That's the way most of the cabins, I know.
I see.
Our old house on 8th Avenue was that way too. We called them balloon ceilings.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd sew all the cheesecloth, they're mostly cheesecloth, you sew it together and then stretch it, you know, across your ceiling. And then you'd put your paper on there. And some of the walls too, we had long walls, and so that was stretched over the log walls, and we put building paper on it, and then we had burlap lining our cabin. Well, anyway, go back to this fire. They got cold, and so they didn't know what to do. They thought, well, they'd start up the fire, you know. And so they got a bunch of paper, and of course these old airtight heaters, they open at the top, and you feed it with your coal, dump your coal in the top.
Yeah.
Usually you pick up your coal bucket and shake coal in, or use a shovel. But they opened up the top and they just piled a bunch of paper in there. And it flamed up and it caught the ceiling on fire. Caught the ceiling on fire. And that's what started the fire. And of course, there was nothing they could do. And the mother had locked them in.
They couldn't get out? Oh, they were locked in?
Oh, she locked them. She locked them in. Oh, yeah, she locked them in.
So they couldn't get out?
No, they couldn't get out.
Oh.
And so that's what started the fire. So Irene was burnt worse than any of them, because she was one day she was trying to find the baby, and they got the boy and the girl out, and the little Porter girl, she died. Oh, the boy died just within a few days from exhaling from the fumes, you know, these old burning rags and things in there. The little boy died, and then the little Porter girl, she lived 2 or 3 weeks, maybe something like that, had in the hospital.
Was she badly burned?
And,
also?
No, she wasn't burned. They weren't burned. They weren't burned because they were the ones at the window, and they got them out to see before they got burnt.
But they had
they had inhaled all this fumes from the burning paper and stuff, and so they died from that, the exposure, whatever you call it.
But
and,
Irene was burned.
But Irene was burned
the
because
baby.
She was looking for the baby.
Yeah.
She kept crying, my baby brother, and so that's when they knew there's a baby in there.
I see.
And Jess said to, I think his name was, not Groves, but the fireman. Oh, I should know the names of all them, but that won't make too much difference. She says, my God, there's a baby here somewhere, and because she keeps crying about the baby. And that's when they found it behind the door, and it was just crispy. It was just pretty bad. It was still alive, but Jess said it was, well, he couldn't eat supper that night. He said, just sickening. So that was the start of Irene's troubles. That's how she got burnt. So it's altogether different than the story in here.
Where was Agnes at that time?
She was down at this green, this fellow's house drinking.
Cloy's house drinking?
Yes, And when she heard the fire whistle and all, and usually when there's a fire, they would announce, you know, like when I was in the telephone office, the fire come in, you say it was 5th and Cushman, or it was...
So when people called in on the phone...
They knew where the fire was.
You could tell
them. And when the firemen would blow the whistles, it'd be a long blast for one side and several short ones for what block, like it'd be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 blocks from the 5th, on 5th Street, well then there'd be 5 short ones with the long blast. And then on the other side, it would be the short, just a short blast.
Uh-huh.
And at 6th Avenue, it'd be 6 blasts, like
yeah.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And people then, the operator would open up her jet, or, you know, her plug there, and she keeps saying over and over, you know, what the fire was. So she heard somebody said it was the Sherman cabin, and so that's when, what's her name, heard that, and when Agnes heard it, and she went up there, and so she cried and screamed, and they said she just about went all to pieces. And so they had the baby in the hospital like for a long time. Then the Qantas or Lions or somebody sent her out several times to outside, you know. Mm-hmm. But she was so young, I don't know how she knew too much. Well, of course, she was there 10 years, but I don't see how she remembered too much of Fairbanks or anything when they sent her out.
Yeah. Well, so, when she came back, she was around 18 years old, as I recall. I talked to her this summer when she and I went to lunch with mm-hmm. this one day. I think she told me that she was 18 when she came back to Fairbanks.
Could be. Uh-huh.
So she's, you know, she probably had pretty vivid
memories. Maybe she's
older
than I thought she was at the fire. I thought she was around, just as I said, she was around 5-6 years old. She was so small.
Now this article in the Alaska magazine, what's it say? How old is she there?
She said she was there 10 years.
Yeah, but does it say she's 62 there? Or?
Yes, let's see, 64, I think. Let's see.
64, so...
I think she said 64. Yeah, now it rose about 64.
Okay, well, she's 64 now. That means she was born in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
So if the fire was in 1924...
Then she was older. Then she was older at that time, yeah. Because really, in 1924, I remember that date. I don't remember why, but that was the date that the fire broke out.
And then what happened to Agnes? Did she just remain here?
She was down around Nenana. Mm-hmm. She finally died down there. I don't know what with her. Was it she got killed or just what happened to her? And then Irene was with her down there for a long time. And then, I don't know if it was before her mother died or what, Irene got married, some man. I don't know whether he thought that she had something or what. I don't know why. Who would marry her? I don't know. But he married her and she had a little boy. And when she came down to Fairbanks, she had this little boy about 6, 7, maybe 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And so the authorities took him all away from her because she wasn't treating him right. And she doesn't mention having ever been married or having a child, but I don't remember the name.
She's talked to me about him, but she hasn't heard from him for almost 5 years.
I don't remember the name from the boy.
Yeah.
I don't remember the man. Do you know his name?
I don't know his name. And I know that she has a son because I've heard her talk about him in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And... the last time I talked to her about that, she said that she was worried about him because he had diabetes, and he's had it for some time, and she thought maybe that he has died.
Oh, where does he? He was raised out there by some social order or something.
Here in town or outside?
No, outside. No, they sent him out. They took him away from her when she came up to Fairbanks with him. He was so neglected and all, and wasn't getting the right food.
They took
Kitty Hensley's girl Hazel away from her, you know, mm-hmm. and she was about 10, 12 years old. They took her away from her, and because she wasn't taken care of at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I understand that Dick Callahan might possibly remember when she died down there, because mm-hmm. he was around there, I think, at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so, Agnes then kind of stayed around the Nenana area.
Yes, she stayed around there all the time. Yes, she didn't come back to Fairbanks at all anymore to live, because Nenana was in the heyday. But you know, to go back to this other, her sister, in Nenana she had a baby down there. Now, whether it was by Sherman or not, I don't know. But she did have this baby. But she was alone. There was no husband around. And that was during the building of the railroad, about 1920.
Well, they finished it in 23, I think.
Yes, it must have been 18
or
19.
Because they just had the 50th.
Because the Burnetts had moved down there, you know, the mother and father of Wally, and it was Searle was a Burnett boy, and I think that Wally here now, well, there was Searle and Dewey and Wally Burnett, the three boys, and then two girls. But they were down there for the building of the railroad, because the older girl married Ryan Nearson. He was a road commissioner for them. They got married down in Indiana. Some men came to her, I guess one of the Indiana officials, came to Mrs. Burnett and said that there's a lady down here that's in labor. She's having a baby, and she has no money to go to the hospital. We can't get her in the hospital. And said, someone told me that you were a midwife at times, so maybe you would come over and take care of her.
Now that's Wally Burnett.
That's mother.
His mother.
That's his mother.
The present,
his
Wally Burnett. His
grandmother. The Wally Burnett here. His grandmother.
Oh, his grandmother.
Yeah. I guess both Wallys are here. Wally Senior and Wally Junior are here.
They're both.
Will be Wally Senior's mother and father. And so she took care of the baby. And when the baby was born, Irene wanted to put in Irene's arms, and Irene had nothing to do with it. She said, don't belong to me. I don't want it.
You mean Agnes?
Or Agnes, yeah. She said, I don't want it. Don't belong to me, and I won't have it.
Well,
she said, what am I going to do with this? And so she talked to some of the officials there, and they said, well, all we know what to do is to try to find a foster home or send her. Well, we have no place here for unwanted babies like that and their ponies. So Ms. Burnett talked it over with the two boys, and they decided to adopt her. So they adopted her, named her Frances, and she later married that Brick Jacobs that had the store in Cushman, that's Saks Men's shop. For a long time it was Brick's shop. For, I think you have to keep the name of the original.
But they legally adopted her, so she was Frances Burnett.
Frances Burnett, yes, they adopted her right from the very beginning.
She's now, the Wally Burnett, who's here in town now, who was, you know, runs Polaris Hotel with...
I think he's the grandson. I don't think he's the original. He's not the father, is he, of the other Wally?
Well, there's Wally Sr. and Wally Jr.
Yeah. Well, is it Wally Jr. that has the Polaris?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this would be his grandmother then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they adopted... She was a beautiful little blonde girl, just pretty she could be.
Yeah,
and,
I see.
So the Burnetts, and she tells people about that when she needed help that her sister turned her down, but that's not true because Frances was always taking her food and she gave her money and she tried to be nice to Irene. She felt sorry for her, but she didn't take her home or anything like that. She just couldn't be bothered by being pestered with her, but she did help her. She said she wouldn't do anything for her, but she did. I know that from different sources that she did